If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
The back alley of abortions operating today inside so-called legal abortion clinics.
What I think makes evolutionary theory bad science today is we're not allowing an honest testing of it.
If you're a Christian and you're going to oppose same-sex marriage, we're going to put you in Bigotville and you have to stay there. And if we catch you outside in likable land, then we're going to be very angry about this and punish you for kind of coming into our territory.
I think the liturgy really is children's church. You know, it's especially true when you see people who've lost their memory, who've lost their sight, who don't know how to read. Children who don't know how to read, they can all participate in the liturgy.
Latin teachers and future seminarians, love, issues, etc. Pater Noster, qui es in caelis, sanctificat or nomen tuum, ad veniam regnum.
Well, it certainly gave us a lot to talk about last year. It seemed as though about once a month there was a big biblical archaeology discovery. It was sometimes something that was seemingly small, and sometimes it was something that was really, really big. They have assembled, at least Christianity Today has assembled, a top 10 list of discoveries in biblical archaeology. We're going to be talking about them on this Wednesday, January the 4th. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. back live on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Craig Evans will be our guest. We're going to talk with him about those discoveries. Which one stands out as the most significant? Then, part four of our series, are social progressives anti-science? We're going to talk about climate change. Dr. Cal Beisner of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation will be our guest. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker, Jesus calling his disciples according to John's Gospel, John 4. And then we're going to spend some time with Pastor Peter Burfein, beginning a series with him on Gnosticism in 21st century America. Today, we'll just do a little Gnosticism 101. What is it? Where did it come from? What has been its almost constant relationship to not only Christianity, but to other world religions as well? Now, you can join us over the next 2 hours with your questions or your comments, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc and the Issues Etc. comment line for our beloved on-demand listeners, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about biblical archaeology's top 10 discoveries in 2016, Dr. Craig Evans. He's Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University and author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. Dr. Evans, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. Good to be with you.
Was 2016 a particularly active year for discoveries in biblical archaeology?
Well, I think it was. I guess I'd put it this way. 2014 was a great year, 15 was a great year, and 16 was a great year. What I've done is I've stopped saying, wow, this is the greatest year ever, because the very next year seems to match it. So 16, I would say, is another great year in archaeology, and I wouldn't be surprised if the new year we're in now, 2017, if it doesn't turn out to be another great year, too. It's just there are a lot of important digs underway, and things keep being found. So it's an exciting field, and I'm just glad to be part of it.
Can we say, in a sense, that biblical archaeology, which really hasn't been around that long, is kind of coming into its own?
Yeah, you're right on that. Archaeology, it's a bit difficult to say when it really began, because you can go back 200-plus years. You can go all the way back into the 1700s. And I'm not sure I would call it archaeology, but you have adventurism, you have Indiana Jones kind of stuff where people were looking for treasures, tombs were getting looted, things were being hauled out of the Middle East, especially out of Egypt. The public became fascinated with it. The Rosetta Stone was found. That's sort of the beginning of archaeology. Then in the 1800s, archaeological societies, Near Eastern societies, were being founded. and there was a more conscious effort, a more deliberate academic effort to think through what was going on, taking careful notes and so on. But still, it was, there was a lot of looting, a lot of carelessness. Not until we really got into the 20th century did archaeology as an honest-to-goodness discipline begin to emerge. But even so, real archaeology done properly has probably only been a reality for 70 or 80 years.
So of the several we're going to discuss this afternoon, which of these stands out the most to you?
Well, I've been reviewing the list. It's right in front of me. I think it was a good selection by Christianity Today. And the one that stands out for me is right in the middle of their list. It's number 5, and it has to do with the Temple Mount floor designs. And what that shows, it's this sifting project, which I think is great. This is debris hauled away from the Temple Mount some years ago by the authority, it's Islamic, that controls the Temple Mount, where the Dome of the Rock is with its golden dome, where also the black-domed Al-Aqsa Mosque is at the south end. And it was that mosque that needed some help. Its footings were breaking down, and so a lot of earth was removed. Several dozens of truckloads of debris and earth removed, and no archaeologist was permitted to supervise this digging. I thought it was very discourteous. And this material was just dumped, and it's been sifted systematically very recently in the last couple of years, and it's amazing what continues to be found. And actual floor tiles from the temple, Herod's temple, have now come to light. And I think that's a pretty significant discovery. It not only helps us understand what the temple would have looked like, the temple that stood in Jerusalem in the time of Jesus, but it also provides additional evidence that there really was a temple. You might wonder, well, doesn't everybody know that? Actually not. There are some skeptics, many of them are Muslims, who actually say there never was a Jewish temple. So archaeology sometimes gets itself right in the middle of politics. So I would, for me, that's my number one find on this list.
Let's start kind of taking in general order that which was listed by Christianity Today. That began with an ancient papyrus that mentions Jerusalem. What was found and what's its significance?
Well, it dates to the 7th century, and part of this papyrus says from the king's maidservants from Na'arat, jars of wine to Jerusalem. And so it attests commerce, the fact that something is being transported. And of course, you know, it's referring to the king, and it's 7th century. And so this is just prior to the Babylonian destruction of Jerusalem. And so it's further evidence that there really was a kingdom of Israel in the 7th century. And of course, it also shows literacy, mentions Jerusalem. So I think that's, it's ranked number 10, so we're counting from the bottom on up, number 10. That's a fairly significant find for lots of reasons.
There have been, it's kind of set against the backdrop of liberal Bible scholarship, which simply asserted at times that most of the stuff in the Old Testament having to do with the various kings beginning with Saul and David is more or less made up, or at least highly exaggerated.
Well, yeah, you're right. The school of minimalist thought, as it's sometimes called, the minimalists have said either, they often have said that Saul and David and Solomon simply did not exist, that these are mythological, King Arthur type mythological characters in Israel's foggy, distant past. But minimalism has really taken a hard hit in archaeology the last 25 years because we have made finds that go back to the 8th, 9th, 10th centuries B.C. that support the biblical narrative. And we actually have David's name inscribed on a 9th century inscription from Tel Dan. And the minimalists have even tried to, say, oh, it's a fake. But ongoing discoveries confirm that, no, it's not a fake. It is genuine. So there is a house of David, and so if there is a David, there likely was a son of David, and that's Solomon. Then we even have an ostracon with several lines of Paleo-Hebrew writing on it that agrees with language found in 1 and 2 Samuel, which could be an announcement of Saul's coronation, who will now provide justice and protection for widows and orphans and other defenseless people. And, of course, it attests that people could write in the 10th century, and so something like Samuel and Kings could be written that far back in time. So these kinds of discoveries, as well as Eilat Mazar's ongoing archaeology in Jerusalem itself, that dates back to the 9th and 10th centuries B.C. as well, shows that there really was a kingdom of Israel and that a King David is not a myth at all, but was, in fact, a real person.
Number 9, according to Christianity Today, is an ancient glass factory that is found at the foot of Mount Carmel.
Yeah, that's important, too, because I think when we find glass, you know, usually it's Roman glass from the Herodian and Roman periods, but when we find glass, it just shows you, you know, the ancients were sophisticated and could make very attractive vessels for drinking or perfume and other things like that. And so any discovery of glass usually catches our attention.
There's also in Caesarea Maritima a sunken junk. What are we talking about there?
Yeah, you know, I've never done marine archaeology, but I find it fascinating, and I know a couple of marine archaeologists. I'm tempted to get certified and do some scuba. That, of course, is an archaeologist's dream. And in this particular case, you had a boat that was filled with large numbers of metal objects, including idols and lamps and coins and other things, probably to be melted down, recycled. Anyway, it sank, and nearby Caesarea Maritima, which is basically on the coastline by Samaria, in between Galilee in the north and Judea in the south. And that's a treasure load. And, of course, there are all these objects, and, you know, they can each one of them be studied. So that was quite a find. That's a jackpot.
And before we go to our break, let's talk about the discovery of Solomon's palace at Gezer.
Well, you know, that's just one more thing. This dates back to the 10th century. That's what I was saying just a minute ago. And, of course, I was referencing Jerusalem, but this is Gezer, which is not Jerusalem. It's part of Solomon's ancient empire, Israelite empire. You'd want to look at 1 Kings chapter 9, verses 16 to 17 for reference to it, his palace at Gezer. This is just one more indication that the biblical narratives, in fact, were talking about real places and real history and not just imagination and fiction.
Dr. Craig Evans is our guest. We're talking about biblical archaeology's top discoveries in 2016 on this Wednesday afternoon, January the 4th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. When we come back, we're going to talk about Roman writing tablets.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Christians young and old are increasingly pressured to change their beliefs. That's why St. Jude said we need to contend for the faith once for all delivered to the saints. At the San Antonio Worldview Conference, Confessional Lutherans Jonathan Fisk, Jay Weber, Ryan McPherson, and Craig Parton will unmask the false, direct us to Christ and His Word, and defend the faith. The San Antonio Worldview Conference, Saturday, February the 11th, San Antonio, Texas. Visit worldusa.org. worldusa.org.
daily exercise for the Christian mind, you're listening to Issues Etc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Listen to the best of the church's Christmas music during the entire Christmas season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. During the 12 days of Christmas, Lutheran Public Radio, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about biblical archaeology's top discoveries in 2016. Dr. Craig Evans is our guest. He's Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University. Author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Let's talk about Roman writing tablets. These were actually discovered in Great Britain. That's how about as far north, I think, as the Roman Empire extended there on that island. And why were they significant? Why, as you've mentioned here several times, is literacy such an important thing to establish in biblical archaeology?
Well, it's very important. For one reason, it suggests that biblical writers really could write in the time the Bible says they did the writing, whether it's Old Testament, which has already been touched on, people back in the days, court stenographers, people in the days of Solomon, and even as far back as David and Saul, could actually write things down. Records were actually kept. And so when we have biblical books like Samuel and Kings saying, well, this is what happened back when these kings ruled, it's not just based on very poorly remembered oral tradition, but based also on official written notes. Well, the same thing applies in the New Testament. Were there people who were capable of writing down what Jesus taught, things that he said, the teaching of his disciples, so that when the Gospels were written down about a generation or so after the time of Jesus, they're actually based upon written records and not just vague memories that people have. And so some skeptical scholars have claimed in the last 20 or 30 years that literacy rates were so low that almost no one could read and write. 5% of adult males, perhaps, could read, and nobody else. It just flies in the face of the evidence. Well, what's interesting about these writing tablets, and of course the discovery number 6, as it's ranked in the Christianity Today article, are several tablets. These are waxed pieces of wood on which there is writing, and they're usually bifolds. They're folded once. They were found at London, and the oldest dates to the year A.D. 57. Well, I can add to that, at further north, north of London, at Vindolanda, which is near Hadrian's Wall, there have been 850 tablets found over the last 40 years. They range in date from the late 1st century and then not as old as that. Now, what this shows, these tablets, is that everybody could read and write. What I mean by that, it isn't just high-ranking officers, but enlisted men, servants, businessmen, wives, just about everybody is writing letters and receiving letters from elsewhere in the Roman Empire. So what these tablets attest in this far-flung outpost today called Great Britain, and you are right, that was the northwestern edge of the Roman Empire. So in this far-flung outpost in the Roman Empire, everybody can read and write. And the archaeological evidence found elsewhere in the Roman Empire supports that. So the idea that only 4, 5, 6% of adult males could read and write, I think, is a gross underestimation. Literacy was far more widespread.
Number four, we had talked about five at the outset, but number four is a Philistine cemetery excavation. What was found there?
Well, the details are still being reported as to what was found there. It's at Ashkelon. Other Philistine cities have been excavated, like Caiaphah and Gath. But Ashkelon is yet another key Philistine city. One of the things that's important about the Philistine excavations is it helps us see the difference between the Israelite people on the one hand and the Philistines on the other. With Philistines, you're going to find more idols. You're going to find more pagan things. You're also going to find non-kosher food remains, and that basically means bones, faunal remains. And so typically when you find a Philistine city, you're going to find the remains of dog bones and pork, you know, pig bones, and that sort of thing. But the cemetery as such gives us an indication sometimes of afterlife belief or other ideas and traditions. So this hasn't been published yet, but I suspect the details will be very revealing and once again help us understand how Israel was different from its Gentile neighbors.
One of the things that I don't think I'd read about this year was a stone jar factory found near, of all places, a location in the Gospel of John where stone jars are actually mentioned, Cana.
Yeah, that's another good, yeah, not too far from Cana of Galilee, an actual quarry was found. Limestone is very common in the Holy Land, and the great stones of Herod's temple and all the rest of that, these are made out of limestone. It's not unusual. They're different kinds of limestone, and that was the typical stone used for making cups, bowls, and jars, tabletops, and so forth. Now, why did they like to make cups out of stone and jars out of stone instead of out of clay, out of ceramic? Well, it's because unlike ceramic, which it was susceptible to impurity, stone wasn't. And that's according to the teaching of Leviticus. And so if your ceramic pot or cup or plate became impure, you were to break it. But the stone could be washed and reused. And so for Jewish people concerned with impurity, then stoneware instead of ceramicware, earthenware, stoneware was very popular and in demand. So it was very fortunate for us to actually find a quarry. And by the way, within the quarry were some items, cups, bowls, and jars that weren't even complete. They were just halfway there, or maybe they were imperfect and were abandoned. So it's a great opportunity for us to study and see how they made these pieces.
So we're talking here about something that lends a lot of credibility to the inclusion, and no reason why anyone would ever suppose to include that in the story of the Wedding of Cana, except that here are these jars that where water was kept for the Jewish rites of purification.
What were exactly those? And you're so right on that. And a lot of times we have details like that in the Gospels where just in passing, it's not really the main point of the story, it's just in passing it gets mentioned, and it reveals over and over again that the Gospel writers actually do know what they're talking about. Historians call this verisimilitude. You have a detail that's being described that is in fact real, it's not mythological, and it shows that the Gospel writer actually does understand the culture. And so even though it's incidental, it's an item that's mentioned, and in this case, actually confirmed. And Todd, I might add that at the actual dig site, the archaeological dig site in Cana of Galilee, fragments of stone water jars have actually been recovered, which is completely consistent with the story in John's Gospel, chapter 2.
Let's talk about a shrine at the Lachish Gate that points back to something in 2 Kings chapter 18.
Yeah, Hezekiah was involved in some reforms, and of course, oftentimes Old Testament kings and Old Testament Jewish high priests, when they get involved in reforms, that usually means pushing back against paganism. And in this particular case, there were horned altars that were pagan, that were contrary to the law of Moses. And so we've actually found a horned altar with the horns that have been chopped off, cut off, and that is consistent with Hezekiah's reforms. And by the way, a stone toilet was also found at Lachish. And I think once again it tells us, you know what, these people weren't that primitive. They actually had running water and plumbing.
And then finally, one we've talked about most recently, just because it was in terms of its, I'm not going to say discovery, it's uncovering, was most proximate to us. It came at the end of the year, and that was the unsealing of the burial slab of Christ at the tomb of the Holy Sepulchre.
Yes, that was a very interesting piece of work that was done. The National Geographic Society was involved in it. And I have the highest respect for them. What they do is usually done very, very well. And so the marble cladding was removed from what had been traditionally believed it was the burial ledge on which the body of Jesus would have been placed. And I think what has been confirmed are two or three things. Number one, it really is a burial ledge with the marble removed so we could see what it really looked like. The marble was added only about 500 years ago. And then it was a burial ledge. It is consistent with being a first century tomb. So that supports the traditional identification of this location. That is, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre probably does stand above the very burial spot of Jesus following his crucifixion. And then another surprise, and this was not expected, but the actual walls of the original tomb proved to be much higher than expected. And so when Queen Helena, the mother of Emperor Constantine in the 4th century, had the Church of the Holy Sepulchre built, you know, archaeologists were just chagrined that most of the tomb had been removed. It had been chopped down, leveled. That was to, you know, make it possible to build the church, and thus removing a great deal of the tomb, but not as much of it had been removed after all. And so we still had the vertical walls, probably the equivalent of about the bottom half or bottom third, still standing. We just didn't know that, because if you've been in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, there's what's called an edicule. It's a little miniature shrine that stands on top of it. And, of course, this completely obscures your sense. You're able to see it. You wait in a line and you go in. I've been in it several times. And so you just see a few things. And, you know, if that edicule wasn't there, then the archaeologist would be able to see it more clearly. But in this study, things were removed and looked at. And so there were some new discoveries made. And the bottom line is it all supports, it doesn't prove, but it is supportive of the original claim that that probably is the place where Jesus was buried.
There was also an inscription of a cross.
That's right. And that, of course, would be probably from the Byzantine period, but maybe a little earlier than that. But that would just, again, show how ancient the tradition is. You know, just to, I want to remind our hearers, our audience, that Queen Helen arrived in the 4th century and asked the locals where was the place Jesus was buried. And they all pointed to this one particular place, which was not a tomb. They pointed to a place that was level and had a pagan shrine standing on it that had been built under the orders of Emperor Hadrian in the early 2nd century. And yet, the locals said, it's underneath that shrine. So Queen Helena said, okay, tear down the shrine and dig. And that's what they did. And they dug down to, and guess what they found? A first century tomb complex. And so how in the world did these people know that? And what I argue is that shows that there's a continuity of village memory. People stay put generation after generation. So even though that holy site was slighted by Emperor Hadrian in the 2nd century in retaliation against the Jewish people for the Bar Kokhba revolt that ended in 135 AD, the local memory was preserved. And so even though Queen Helen came then 200 years later and asked, where is this tomb? They all pointed to the same place. And so even though Hadrian had slighted it, had covered it over, had built on it a pagan shrine, it didn't matter. People still remembered. So I don't think that's a coincidence. I don't think it's a false memory. I think they remembered correctly, and there is nothing in our archaeological work that suggests that they were mistaken. Again, it's not proven. I would never say that, but everything that's been found underneath the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, everything that's been found is consistent with what we would expect to find for an early first century tomb, and a tomb that would have existed in the time of Jesus, the tomb that the Gospels describe where Jesus' body was placed.
Finally, with about a minute, Dr. Evans, is there anything that is kind of on the burner right now in terms of biblical archaeology that you think has great promise or you're particularly excited about?
Well, yes, I am. There are several digs. There's a new pre-70 synagogue that's been found in the hills of the Golan, near the Golan Heights. I'm excited about that. It's going to be one more synagogue. The decorated stones that have been found in the synagogues of Magdala and Horvat Kur that suggest the Galileans are very Jerusalem temple oriented. I think that's very significant. And if I may sound self-serving, the dig I'm involved in at Mount Zion in Jerusalem, it could well be a high priestly home that was destroyed by the Romans in the year 70. And I can't wait for that dig to come to a conclusion. So, yeah, there are some hot things that are going on. Now, these are all New Testament related. In the Old Testament world, the ongoing dig at Jerusalem under Eilat Mazar's direction, that holds a lot of promise also.
Dr. Craig Evans is Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, and he's author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. Dr. Evans, thank you very much for being our guest.
You're very welcome.
On the other side of the break, we're going to continue a series that we started right at the end of 2016, and here in January of 2017, part four of our series, Are Social Progressives Anti-Science? Today we'll take up the subject of climate change. Dr. Cal Beisner will be our guest, founder and national spokesman for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan gathers to receive our Lord's gifts in word, baptism, and supper every Sunday morning at 9:15, Bible study at 11. Join us at 4219 Park Lane in Door, or visit us on the web, epiphanydoor.org. Christ-centered, cross-focused, historic, confessional, liturgical, Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan, epiphanydoor.org, 616-681-0791.
I think every man, every Christian, should consider, at least, the possibility of God calling him into the holy ministry.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Carl Fekencher of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Because that's the way that God has designed for faith in Christ Jesus to be spread, for the gift of eternal life that Christ Jesus earned by his death and resurrection to be shared with people, by the washing of baptism for infants and for adults, for the instruction, the proclamation of the word that happens on a nonstop basis in God's kingdom. God uses people, he uses men to be those proclaimers, to be those men who share the sacraments.
If you've ever considered becoming a pastor, contact Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Their phone number, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com, churchmusicsolutions.com.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.